He gave me that nickname a long time ago. Why, I have no idea. But I like it. You know, brethren, as social creatures living on an inhabited planet, it's impossible to avoid associations with fellow human beings, even if we would like to choose to do so. You know, we interact at work, we interact at school, in our neighborhood, and of course here at church. As Christians, it is important that our dealings with other people be conducted in wisdom, which is the title of the sermon this afternoon, Wisdom in Matter of Friendships. I might mention, too, it's going to be a two-part sermon because one part was going to take me overtime. I learned that the hard way when I gave this for the first time in Dallas. I had to stop, so I just realized that we're going to have a two-part sermon. The benefit, in some respects, is there'll be two short sermons as to a long, long sermon. So that's just a heads up. So it's important that our dealings with other people be conducted in wisdom. You know, Paul wrote to the church at Colossae, though speaking specifically of our conduct among non-believers, but obviously it would apply to Christians as well. Turn to Colossians 4. Colossians 4. And let's read verses 5 and 6. Colossians 4, verses 5 and 6. Where it says that we should walk in wisdom towards those who are outside, non-believers, who have a different concept, belief than what we do, redeeming the time, and let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Obviously, that applies to us speaking to members of the body of Christ, because we still should be allowing our speech to be with grace, seasoned with salt, and how we should answer. So it isn't just for those outside, but Paul specifically was addressing it that way. You know, God in his all-sufficient word has provided the wisdom necessary whereby we can develop good relationships with those around us and avoid the pitfalls that too often destroy good friendships. So this sermon is more of a practical living message that we all can use no matter what our age, although I did kind of more specifically prepare with the youth in mind. They can learn this wisdom when they are younger. It will stand them in good stead as they grow older. But obviously it's applicable for all of us. In some respects, that's why I was hoping the Springfield kids would, grandchildren would be here, etc. But that's okay. When I give it the second time here, if they're here, I will give a rehearse, a review of the first sermon, then jump into the second part. So a good portion of this wisdom is found in a particular book of the Bible. And I'm sure all of you can guess what book that is, right? What book is filled and written to give wisdom? Proverbs, right. The book of Proverbs is written to help us with our wisdom. So you can be turning over there. And as you turn to the book of Proverbs, let's note first what it says about the value of a good friend. Wisdom in matters of friendship. We need to understand the value of a good friend, whether we be young or old. Now, growing up in St. Louis, before I moved with my father, about halfway through my freshman year of high school, I lived with my mother, and we moved all the time. You know, I had a very unsettling childhood, I should say unstable childhood from the standpoint of any kind of continuity. As a matter of fact, I attended 8 different schools. You might say, well, wow, that's a lot of many schools to attend, you know, over the course of your years in school. Well, let me reemphasize the fact I attended 8 different schools in my 4th grade year. 1 year, 8 different schools. So I was somewhat of a loner because we moved often. The only time I really attended any particular school for any length of time was my 7th, 8th, and 9th grade year. I went to Wellston High School. So we moved so often that it was hard to really develop any kind of close relationship for a number of reasons. One, you weren't there that long. Number two, if you develop a close relationship and then up and move, it's a little bit difficult. So I had a lot of superficial friends. You know, I had a lot of friends all the time, but no one really was all that deep a friend. Until I went to Wellston Junior High and part of my freshman year at Wellston High School. There, a young man by the name of Jackie Collins and I became really, really, really close friends. We spent virtually every day together, both during school as well as the summer. And I did have a bicycle, which he did not have. It was a bike that was able to hold both of us. He was bigger than I, okay? Outweighed me by, maybe 30 pounds, 40 pounds. I was about 2 inches taller than I at that particular time. My bike, but I would sit on the handlebars. Those of you who remember this time? And he would put me all over Wellston. You know, I'd get on the handlebars, we would take off, we would just go hither and yon. Usually to a ball field of some sort or a basketball court, you know, summertime playing baseball, wintertime playing football and, you know, basketball. So we both enjoyed our sports. But we became really, really good friends. The value of a good friend. A friend is someone who can be a source of comfort. And Jackie was that. And I think I was to him as well. Notice Proverbs chapter 17. Proverbs chapter 17. Verse 17. It said, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. A friend, a true friend loves at all times. He's there for you. And I could count on Jackie. I really could count on Jackie if I had a need or just somebody to talk with. And it was true with him. He felt that he could rely upon me. And he was one who really would do anything for me. It was very comforting. Matter of fact, when I moved with my dad, I think it was like February of my freshman year, the most difficult thing I did was leave Jackie behind. Everything else that took place in my life growing up until that time wasn't all that hard to leave. But Jackie was a beloved friend. In some cases, a beloved friend can be better than that provided by a brother. A you know, brother is born for adversity, but notice Proverbs 18:24. Proverbs 18:24. A man who has friends must himself be friendly. We're all very familiar with that part of the scripture. If you want to have friends, you must be friendly. But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. And there are some friends who are just like that, that you can count on, maybe more so than a family member, because they have that love and that care for you as an individual. And I would encourage anyone to really develop a good friendship with somebody. There's just some type of bonding that takes place that is very beneficial. Now, you need to be wise in who you choose to be a friend, and we'll discuss that as we progress through the sermon. But again, no matter what your age, it's good to have a friend. I think all of us in the body of Christ have a good friend in the church that we maybe are a little closer to than someone else, and that is not a problem. As long as you don't ostracize other people and become cliquish within the congregation of God. But having a close friend that you can just talk with, unload on, seek help, seek guidance, is a good thing. And I would encourage our young people to develop that type of friend with wisdom and understanding. Proverbs 27:9. Proverbs 27:9. We're told that a friend is someone who can be a source of good counsel. Now, Jackie would give me what he considered wise advice, and I would listen. I would do the same for him as we talked about many, many different things. But as a junior high student, our wisdom was probably a little bit narrow. not as wise as it should be as we grew older, right? As you become an older adult, you know, your counsel can be definitely a greater source of wisdom. Proverbs 27 and verse 9. Proverbs 27 and verse 9. Ointment and perfume delight the heart. Now, I know we have fragrance issues in our society today, and it makes it difficult for that in many instances. But those who don't have that type of problem, they enjoy the smell of a nice perfume. They really do. I love the fragrance of my wife's perfumes. And I'm sure you men do as well. There's just something delightful. It delights the heart. And the sweetness of a man's friend gives delight by hearty counsel. It's one of the benefits of a really good close friend. Is you have someone you can talk with and discuss whatever you need to. Proverbs 11, verse 9, verse 14. Proverbs 11, verse 14. Just a general statement about counsel. Verse 14 says, where there is no counsel, the people fall. And I have known a few people like that. I'll take care of it myself. I don't need any advice. I'm wise enough to handle this. And in many instances, they may be. But not in every instance. It's wise to be able to get good counsel. Matter of fact, it says that in the next part of the verse. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. And of course, the primary counselor that we should have is God Almighty and Jesus Christ. They, matter of fact, wrote us an entire book filled with wise counsel. That's one of the benefits of study, looking into the Word of God. It enables us to become wise, and that is emphasized extensively throughout the book of Proverbs. You know, having a good friend is someone you can bounce ideas off of. A good friend cares for you. And so he will seek, or she will seek, to give you good, wise counsel. They don't want to do anything to harm or hurt you. Matter of fact, too often they may counsel you on what you want to hear. You're talking with them about that, and the other thing is, yeah, that's right. He's a real creep. You know, instead of saying, you know what, Frank, Jackie did this a time or two. Maybe we should look at that a little bit differently. Jackie was wise beyond his years. He really was. He was wise beyond his years as a young teenager. And, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed that. Where there is no counsel, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. So a friend who can be trusted to be a source of good counsel is certainly a blessing. But having friends who are dependable is not always easy. Not always easy to find. So consider now some advice on the selection of friends. Consider some advice on the selection of friends, beginning with people you do not want as friends. Again, this is wisdom, right? In matters of friendship. Number one, someone who is a gossip. Someone who is a gossip. They can get you into a heap of trouble. And they will share anything and everything about anyone and everyone. And that includes you. That includes you. When my wife and I moved into Pinnacle Club, when I retired and moved back to Texas, I was there maybe 2 or 3 months, and I started playing golf a little bit more than what I had. And so I got to meet a number of people. You know, matter of fact, one group I play with, we have 6 or 7 in that group that they call. Another group, we've got 20, you know, that we'll call around. And sometimes, one time we actually had 4 foursomes, you know, and thoroughly enjoyed that. But as I got to know these individuals, one guy came up to me because he saw me talking with, and I won't mention any names, this particular couple. He says, Frank, I know you're new in the neighborhood, Pinnacle Club. He says, but I don't normally talk about people, and he doesn't, okay? He doesn't. He said, but I just want to give you some advice if you're willing to take it. I said, sure, what is it? He said, I noticed that you have been talking with so-and-so, so-and-so a few times. I said, yeah, they're friendly people. He said, they are friendly people. But just be aware that they're known as the gossips of Pinnacle Club among all the people in that neighborhood. Now, they're not shunned by the people. He said, I just want you to be aware of that because they want to know everybody's business. And then they are willing to share everybody's business. So even though we're a close community, and he does play golf in this 20 group, he says, we're very careful not to share, especially personal, intimate stuff with them. We'll stay very superficial. If they begin to ask probing questions, is what they have a tendency to do, we somehow tactfully change the subject and move on to something else. He said, because if you tell them anything that's a little more personal, whatever else, the entire neighborhood of Pinnacle Club will know about it. So I'm very careful when I'm with them to be friendly, to enjoy our conversations, but I just don't say a whole lot. And I have found that to be the case with them because they have been willing to share with me things about other people in our golfing group. And when they get started, I always have a way of conveniently exiting the situation. You know, I need to go up to the clubhouse, or I need to go into the pro shop, or I need to use the bathroom. Whether I need to or not, at that time, I needed to use the bathroom. Okay, there are things you can do with wisdom to deal with that. So you want to be careful not to hang around with people who are known as gossips. Notice Proverbs 20, verse 19. He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with his lips. And again, this couple are they're flatterers. And they are fun to be around. Don't get me wrong. They have many positive qualities. This is just not one of them, okay? And so you have to be careful. And I'm around them, but they're not a close associate. Other translations put it this way. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with his lips. Therefore, do not associate with a gossip. Another translation says, therefore, do not associate with someone who talks too much. Anybody know someone who talks too much? I like this last one. Therefore, do not associate with one who has a big mouth. I think that says it really, really, really well. So, be aware of those you are around. And I would be very careful making a close friendship with someone that you know to personally be a gossip. Because it will potentially get you in trouble. Someone else you don't want to have as a friend, for the young people who are here in particular, those who are short-tempered and given to violence. Those who are short-tempered and given to violence. Notice Proverbs 22:24. Proverbs 22 and verse 24. It says, make no friendship with an angry man. And with a furious man, do not even go, lest you learn his ways and set a snare for your soul. And then notice Proverbs 1 and verse 10. Proverbs 1 and verse 10 says, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood, you know, violent individuals. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. You ever hung around somebody when you were younger that just wanted to always get into trouble, always was doing foolish things? We've got a couple of kids in Pinnacle Club. It's a great place to live, but it does have some issues. And they finally were caught. There's a lot of construction taking place in Pinnacle Club. There are many, many porta potties. We have two blondes, boys, who think it's funny to go around pushing over porta potties. And it makes a mess, to say the least. And a number of the neighbors, obviously, who live by, and the contractors, we have three or four contractors who live in Pinnacle Club who build houses out there. They were furious. They set up a secret camera in one location, this contractor, and they caught these two boys turning over a porta potty. They had them on film. They knew where they lived, so the HOA president and a couple other people on the board went to this man's house with the video and explained to him how his two sons were turning over outhouses. Now, when I built our home in Pinnacle Club, our outhouse, porta potty, was flipped over. Now, I don't know if I can attribute it to these two boys, but let's say they now are very great suspects of having done that. And so they confronted the father, and my sons wouldn't do that. You know how parents are, right? My sons, so they pulled out the video. He said, I am embarrassed. So he called his two sons in. They had a nice, long conversation. And we haven't had porta potties turned over by these guys that we're aware of anyway. So some people are just that way. You don't want to hang around with them if that is their nature, because they will get you into trouble. And we don't need to be involved with people who are short-tempered and given to violence. Now, when I was growing up with my mother in St. Louis, a couple of my old stories, on my mother's side of the family, she was one of 12, and three of her brothers had taverns, not cocktail lounges, taverns. And Uncle Vince had one out in St. Louis County, and my mother at that time was, she'd just been married a short while to my stepfather. And we lived upstairs over this tavern. And it was an older building, and some of you are familiar with this. How did you get heat? It came from below. It had registers in different rooms, and the heat rose up through the register. They heated downstairs. The tavern was downstairs. They had a small apartment upstairs. So Saturday night would be quite, shall we say, rambunctious at the tavern. My mother worked for Uncle Vince. And so when it got loud, I had to go over to the registers because you could look right straight down. And I'd go from room to room looking down, seeing what was going on. And one time during the Christmas season, I heard this major ruckus downstairs. So I went over to this one register and noticed people rushing out. So I ran to the steps that went downstairs to the back part of the tavern. There was an outside exit. And I opened up the door, looked down, and all these people were going out really fast. And I saw my mother. And I said, Mom, what's going on? And she didn't want to tell me there was a major brouhaha taking place outside. I said, oh, someone's going outside to shoot Santa Claus. And I remember that to this day. I thought, oh, okay. So, my younger life was, actually, you understand why I was not all that sad to move away from St. Louis at that particular time. But another story that I was going to get to had to do with a gentleman by the name of Bill Tizon, who has since died. I was, I was in the fifth grade, and we lived out behind my other uncle's tavern, what was called the Barracks. He had about four or five apartments there, and it used to be an old barracks during World War II. And I was walking behind the tavern going over to visit with somebody, and all of a sudden, Bill Tizon, everybody knew Bill Tizon, came out with four of his buddies out the back door of the tavern. Now, the parking lot behind the tavern was nothing but these big rocks, stones. That was the parking lot. And Bill Tizon was known as an angry man, a violent man, short-tempered. And he worked in construction, and he and four of his buddies would come into my uncle's tavern probably three or four times a week after work and sit down and have four or five or six or 10 or 12 cases of beer. Not that much, but they would drink a lot. And in the back part of my uncle's tavern, they had this pool table, the type you put money in and the balls roll out. And so I'm walking along, and I noticed Bill Tizon and these four guys coming out of the back door. And Belteazon's got this cue stick in his hand. And they go out into the parking lot, and Bill says, "All right." I stopped and watched what's taking place. "All right, we're going to settle this like men. You two can't get along on this part. I want you to fight, and whoever wins, you're the right one." Total stupidity. And so these guys didn't want to fight. You know, they were friends and worked together. But Belteazon had decided you're going to fight. So they start what I call dancing with each other. You know what I mean by that? You know, they don't want to fight. So they're kind of wrestling, and eventually they end up on the ground, and Belteazon starts hitting them with the small end of the cue stick. Thankfully, it was small. He starts hitting them over the back. He says, "Fight like men." And I'm watching all of this, eyes like saucers. And they said, "Well, stop hitting us." And then they get back up. He said, "Okay, let's deal with this correctly. Let's fight." So they started dancing again. You know, they didn't really want to fight. And they end up back on the floor, on the ground, on these big stones. Belteazon again starts hitting them with the cue stick. He said, "This is not fighting. This is not resolving anything. Get up and fight." And they again say, "Bill, stop hitting us." So they get up. They're standing there. Belteazon says, "Are you going to fight?" They said, "No." I said, "Okay, let's go have another beer." That was the neighborhood that I fled from. Okay? Belteazon was an individual who would fight at the drop of a hat. And if you were with him and you got into a fight with somebody who had friends, what did he expect you to do? He expected you to fight along with him. That's why God says, you know, don't hang around short-tempered and people given to violence. It will get you into trouble. Potentially get you killed. Potentially get you killed. Belteazon was just that type of person. And I don't mind mentioning him because you'll never meet him until the resurrection, okay? He died a long time ago. So be aware of that. The type of people you want to hang around with. Next, another person you don't want to hang around with, those given to drinking and gluttony. Proverbs 23 verses 20 and 21. Those given to drinking and gluttony. Do not mix with wine-bibbers or with gluttonous eaters of meat, for the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. So you want to be around industrious people. You don't want to be around someone who's drinking and gluttony and can't get up and go to work. Do you know one of the top three reasons for divorce in this nation of the world? There are a number of them. One is anger. The person can't control himself. The second one is drunkenness. Because a drunkard won't get up, go to work, sleeps in, will miss work, can't hold a job, and pretty soon, let's just say the man does that, the wife can't handle it. And often she's gone. She's gone. However, back to Pentecost Club, we have a gentleman that in my morning group that I play with who was married to a wife who was an alcoholic. And she was an angry drunk. You know there are different types of drunks, right? There's an angry drunk. There's a melancholy drunk. You know, there's a happy drunk. If you have to be around a drunk, be around a happy drunk. Right? Better yet, don't be around anyone like that. But his wife was an angry drunk, and he was sharing his story with me, while I was a minister, and said that we lasted about 6-8 years, and I could no longer take her drinking. You know, she would just get drunk and be drunk for 4 or 5 days. And when she drank, she would get angry. She would get upset. And all of a sudden, she would take it out on me. And he said, it wasn't unusual for her to just actually come after me with some type of instrument of warfare. So angry. He's now remarried to a lady. I guess they've been married about 19, 20 years now, who's just a sweet, sweet person. I know her well. But, you know, you have to be careful with those who are given to drink. I've got a very sad story that I want to share with you, and has to do with a teenager. I was transferred into a particular congregation many years ago, and I was there maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and I got a call from a member who said, Mr. McCready, he says, I need to talk with you about something. I said, sure, anytime. He said, I'm going out of town for about a week and a half on business, but I really need to talk with you. And I said, well, can you share at least the subject matter? He says, it's my one son. He had two sons and a daughter, if I remember correctly. He said, my one son, who's a junior in high school, has just somehow gotten caught up with the wrong group. And I've discussed it with him. He said, Dad, these guys are fine. He says, the problem is, not every day, but often during the week, they would get somebody to buy them a six-pack of beer. And they would get in this one kid's car. He was a big man on campus because he had a car, right? And they would go driving around in the country and drink their beer. He said, I keep trying to tell my son, number one, it's illegal for you to do that. Number two, they're going to get into trouble. And he always has a reason as to why. Okay, this is fine. We're not doing any harm. And I said, well, I remember you. I've only been here a few weeks. I said, I don't remember seeing your son. His kids attended with him. I said, why don't I come out and visit with you? And he said, well, yeah, matter of fact, why don't you and come out for dinner? And I can introduce you to my family. You know, you're coming out as a new pastor. I said, that'd be great. And I'll try to maybe spend a little time while we're visiting with this particular son. I said, what are his interests? He said, well, he's an avid Chicago Cubs fan. Oh, I said, that's awesome, because I'm an avid St. Louis Cardinal fan. They are rivals. I said, we can end up having some nice banter and get along talking about that. I'm trying to build a little rapport with him, because just to come in and unload on the kid first time is not going to do a whole lot of good. Matter of fact, he'll probably write me off and not want to talk with me again. I said, so I'd like to build a little rapport with him and then eventually broach the subject with him, maybe on the next visit. And I won't wait long. He said, well, that sounds good. He said, when I get back from out of town, I'll call you and have you, your wife, come over for dinner. And so he left, went out of town. It was about 4 or 5 days later, I get a telephone call from him. And I could tell that he was upset. He was on the verge of crying. Matter of fact, I think he was crying. I said, what was wrong? He said, well, I've been in such and such on business. And he was back home. He said, my wife called me, let me know that my son was killed in an automobile accident. A few days after he and I talked. And I found out, he explained to me what the police, actually the sheriff's department, told him, what they felt happened, is that the four kids, driver, his son was in the front passenger seat, one behind him, one behind the driver, the four of them. And he said they had beer cans in the car. There were four of them with a six-pack. And the sheriff said that we feel that the last two beers were there and they wanted to share them. And up in that part of the country, you had these narrow roads and then you had these concrete abutments, the old bridges, very familiar with those. They kind of came in a little bit and it was a little bit even narrower. And he said, we feel what happened is that the kid in the back seat behind the driver asked for, the beer. And when the kid turned around to give the beer to him, what happens? You turn around, your hand just moves a little bit. It doesn't take a whole lot for the car to veer a little bit to the right. And he hit that abutment straight on. The driver and the youngster behind him, teenager behind him, survived. Severely injured, but survived. The member's son and the kid behind him were killed. It was that part of the car, front of the car, that hit that concrete abutment. And obviously it broke the family's heart, saddened me greatly as well. And his dad said, I talk with him. numerous times about this, explaining the pitfalls and the dangers if you would have just listened. I said, I understand. I understand. And of course, that reminds me of the fifth commandment where it says, honor your father and your mother. Why? That your days may be long on the earth. If this kid would just listen to his dad, he'd probably be alive today with his own kids and his children. As we found out, the kids, all four of them overall, were pretty good kids. They just felt it was cool to be out driving and drinking. And it caused a member's son to be killed because he wouldn't listen to his father. It was a very sad episode, to say the least. It took quite a while for the parents and the siblings to get over it, if they ever did. That type of thing is really, really, really difficult, to say the least. So be careful hanging around with those who are given to drinking. They drink too much, or gluttony. Next, on selection of friends. You don't want to have as a friend someone given to change. Given to change. Proverbs 24, 21. Proverbs 24, 21. My son, fear, have a deep respect and awe for the Lord and the King, and do not associate with those given to change. For their calamity will rise suddenly, and who knows the ruin those two can bring. So be aware of those who are given to change. Notice it doesn't say those who change. Change is important. We all changed at the time of our conversion, did we not? We changed from doing those things that were not pleasing in the sight of God to those things that were. Sometimes in our life we find out maybe this business adventure wasn't the wisest, and so we change and we get out of that particular maybe investment or whatever else. Change is not wrong. But you need to be aware of those who are given to change. Like I say, there are reasons to change for the better. But those who are given to change, change for the sake of change. You ever known anyone who was just totally caught up with fads? Any fad and every fad that came along, they were involved with it. Yeah, I've known some myself. Matthew Henry says this. They have a fondness for novelty or a desire to fish in troubled waters. Meddle not with those that are given to change, either in religion or in a civil government. Come not into their secret. Join not with them in their cabals, nor enter into the mystery of their iniquity. Always changing, always having these different ideas. He goes on to say, those that are restless. They are restless, factious, turbulent spirits, and they commonly pull mischief upon their own heads. Their calamity shall rise suddenly, though they carry on their designs with the utmost secrecy, they will be discovered and brought to punishment. So I encourage our young people who are not here today, to be aware of just change for change's sake. You know, we need stability in our lives. That's a good thing, what God has to say, to have stability. Next, liars, and I emphasize liars, those untrustworthy and those inconsiderate. Notice Proverbs 25, and verse 18. Proverbs 25 and verse 18. Again, liars, those untrustworthy, and those who are inconsiderate as a way of life. Proverbs 25, verse 18. A man who bears false witness against his neighbor is like a club. That would be bad enough, right? Boom, boom, boom. But is it enough? It has to be reemphasized in greater ways. A man who bears false witness against his neighbor is like a club, like a sword, and like a sharp arrow. It's really emphasizing the fact that he can really hurt you and cause a lot of damage. And then he says, confidence in an unfaithful man, again, untrustworthy, confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a bad tooth and a foot out of joints. Like one who takes away a garment in cold weather, and like vinegar on soda. So you want to be aware of being involved with someone who's a liar, untrustworthy, and those who are inconsiderate. You want to find the other type of person to have as a close friend, whether you be a young person or an adult. You really do. Now, what sort of friends do you want? What sort of friends do you want? Number one, those who display wisdom themselves. And like I said, even as a young teenager, looking back, Jackie Collin was wise beyond his age. He was mature beyond his age. I mean, he wasn't like he was 35, 40 years old. But he had a lot of wisdom for someone that age. I count it a blessing to have had that. Those who display wisdom. Proverbs 13. In Proverbs 13:20. He who walks with the wise will be wise. Now, I'm guessing Fred Whitlock is giving his three-part sermon over here as well on wisdom. You know, so he's covering this in greater detail. Understanding wisdom, facts, understanding, and wisdom. What was the first one? Knowledge. Yeah, facts or knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. I've heard the first two. I haven't heard the last one yet. So he who walks with the wise will be wise. But the companion of fools will be destroyed. If you're always hanging around someone who just wants to be involved with folly, not want to be educated, and doesn't want to do his homework, blah, 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 it's going to cause you difficulties and problems. I think of Mr. Armstrong, when it comes to this particular subject. Who here has read Mr. Armstrong's autobiography? Well, then many of you will remember what he had to say about his life, and he said it stood him in good stead. Mr. Armstrong said, who, by the way, never had a college degree, but was a very educated person, more than many who had college. Mr. Armstrong said he tried to be around successful people. You remember reading that? And in that section in his autobiography, he said that he was a salesman. And he would go to a particular community, and he would be in a hotel, and he would pay the steward and the bellhop or whomever to make sure he was out of bed by 7 in the morning. He confided to us at Ben Bastard, he says, I hated to get out of bed. I was a notorious slap the snooze button. He says, so I paid the bellhop, I forget what they called them back then, who had a key to come in and make sure I was up and out of bed. If he had to, pull me out of bed, I wanted to make sure that I was out of bed and I'm working, going to my appointments. And he said, I always tried to hang around with successful people. Notice Proverbs 13:14. The law of the wise is a fountain of life. Therefore, get wisdom. To turn away from the snares of death. Of course, James tells us if you lack wisdom, ask of God who will give it to you abundantly. That doesn't mean that he's just going to open up your head and pour it all in. But if you ask him for it and then apply the principles that he also teaches, you can become a wise person. And it reminds me of something that a number of us tried to do, unfortunately, later in our life. We started it actually in Dallas when I was pastoring. We set up an apprentice program. And we had different members. Some of you may remember this. We had different members. We had different skills. We had, who was a gentleman, sweetheart, who worked for IBM? Chuck Daniels? Chuck Daniels worked for IBM, and he volunteered to be a mentor to a number of kids. My two sons, as a matter of fact, were blessed by that because he took Rick in first as a mentor for apprenticeship at IBM. There at Lunar Road, 635 is where he worked. Rick worked for him for an entire year, his senior year in high school, and then went off to Ambassador College. And he was able to pass that on to his brother Scott, who worked for Chuck Daniels for another year at IBM. And it was a great experience seeing that environment, seeing how that corporate life worked. But we started an apprentice program. And we had individuals who had skilled laborers, who had skills at different labors. I'm trying to think of one who was involved with air conditioning and heating. Came down, we had him do some work for us. Lived up in Denison. It had come to me as well. But he took on, matter of fact, our young son, Scott Michael, was interested in his type of work, so Michael went with him at different times to learn this particular skill. But there were four or five kids that went with him, and Chuck Daniels also worked with others. Scott and Rick were blessed by being able to actually work at IBM. You all know him, the guy up in Denton. Married Rita. Yeah, Jay Holmes. You know Jay Holmes? Yeah. Yeah, he's moving someplace north. Anyway, he was part of the program. We had about, I think, six men and two women who volunteered to be a part of the program, and we had our teenagers take advantage of it. It ended up being a blessing. So, you know, especially as young ones, you know, look for somebody who can be an apprentice. If you're interested in a particular subject at work, find somebody who does that and see if they can be of assistance to you, being a mentor. You know, businessmen and millionaires still have mentors. They have people that they talk with, they rely upon. They still have individuals they talk with, to seek counsel from, who are mentors to them. So it's a good idea to be mindful of. Let's wrap up this first part of the sermon. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33. Do not be deceived. How might we say that today? Do not be deceived. How might you put that statement today? Don't kid yourself. Don't kid yourself. Evil company corrupts good habits. We discussed that earlier on. People we don't want to hang around with. Evil company corrupts good habits. So awake to righteousness and do not sin. For some do not have the knowledge of God. And he says, I speak to your shame. So some of those in Corinth were not necessarily using the wisdom that they could have gained from God. So we will wrap up the first part of the sermon today. And next time we'll get into some other things to be mindful of. Advice on maintaining good friendships. Solving problems with our friends. Good subject matter for kids, our teenagers. So hopefully next time I'm here, they'll be here and I'll give them a quick review of what we covered today.